Hello, everyone. This is Becky Vercel. Hey, thank you so much for being a part of our Greatest Version of You conference call. It's so amazing that I look forward to these calls, I think, more and more every single time that we do them and participate with them. But we appreciate you guys taking time out of your schedule and committing to investing in yourself. And again, our concept of learning how to become the leader that you would want to follow, let alone ask other people to follow. And I can't think of anyone better to be able to learn from and partner with than not only Kayani, but someone so amazing like Mr. John Maxwell. And while we're waiting for him to jump on the line, I kind of wanted to touch bases with everybody, and I kind of explain my experience with Mr. Maxwell. You know, I got started in this industry about 10 years ago, and I didn't take it very seriously. And I'm sure no one can relate to that on the phone, but it took me about 2 years to actually realize not just the opportunity that this industry offers, but also recognize my own potential. And the first time that really happened to me was sitting in a room with 16,000 people with John Maxwell and hearing him, even though he was, you know, probably 100 yards away from me, and felt like it was just myself and him in the room. And there was one thing that I remember, not just the emotions, but the actual concept of investing in yourself and understanding that life is a journey. It's not a destination. And there are so many great things that life has to offer, whether it's business or relationships or, you know, reaching onto something with your spiritual life or physical or, you know, all of these things that are so important to us and understanding how to get out of our own way and recognizing our own potential. And, you know, if there's anyone that could do that for other people in their life, you know, each of us try to strive to be that person for so many others in the world. But I know Mr. John Maxwell has done that for millions and millions of people all across the world. And I love having the opportunity to hear him speak. And for those of you that have not read his books yet, you are missing out on a great opportunity to really take life to a whole nother level. And that might sound like an exaggeration, but I promise you it's not. It's a matter of having that kind of faith and trust in us to know that, you know, earners, you know, and income earners in this business, they are learners. They read. And they have mentors in their life, even if they've never met you before. And John Maxwell has always been one of those mentors in my life. And we have a phenomenal opportunity to not just hear from him every single month, but to actually learn from him face-to-face. And if there's anything that I've ever dreamed of being able to give our team in Kayani, is that same opportunity that someone gave me to hear from him and to have that kind of impact in your life as well. And if nothing else happens in this business, I mean, obviously the money and the trips and the cars and everything else that we do, you know, making an impact in people's lives with the products that we have, those are all incredible things. But the opportunity that we have to change someone's path and the course of their life, letting them start to recognize their own potential. And there's a difference between having confidence in yourself and recognizing potential and understanding that not only do we all have the God-given right to become successful, but we also have a purpose in life. And so many of us can find that purpose through what we do with Kayani, whether it's helping other people, whether it's changing our family finances, whether it's, you know, waking up every day with a passion in our lives. It's amazing how as your journey progresses in Kayani, different things will become important at different times. And I'm sure you guys can look back and think, you know, when I was 18 years old, I thought I knew what I wanted. And then when I was 30 years old, it was completely different. And when I was 40, it turned a complete 180 as well. And as we move on in life, different things become important. And we also start to recognize things that we need to work on in life. So here we have an opportunity coming up March 15th in Los Angeles. It'll be at the Manhattan Beach Marriott. You can fly into LAX and take a 5-minute taxi ride to the Marriott. But a chance to spend the day with John Maxwell, with the top money earners of this company, with our CEO, Mr. Michael Brashears, and to learn firsthand, again, what Kayani has to offer, but more importantly, what you have to offer, not just to yourself, but to the world and the potential that you actually have here. And so many of us overlook the importance of what that really can become. You know, sometimes I think we feel like we hear our upline tell us how great we are or how great other people are, and we think it's just a show or it's just part of what we do. But there are real people in this business that care about your success and care about your potential, and they recognize those things. And so many of the leaders, because I know them personally, you know, them personally, their families, all of the people around them, and I know what they're willing to do for you, but it's just a matter of reaching out and doing those things, you know, for yourself. So we can teach everything there is to know in Kaiani. We just can't teach desire. We can't teach a work ethic. And we can't make you come to these events, make you become a better person. But the opportunity is definitely there.
I'm sorry, Becky. I'm here. I hate to interrupt. Oh. That. Can you hear me?
I can, and I love when you interrupt. There's no such thing. I mean, we're so excited to have you on the call and have the chance to spend some time with you. I would love to take the opportunity to introduce you myself. And for those on the phone who haven't had a chance to be on these calls yet, or maybe this is the first time that you are learning about Greatest Version of You and John Maxwell. I have to say, not only is he the leadership guru of all gurus and a personal mentor of mine, but this is a man who has made it his life purpose to really make a difference in the world, and not just his own world. I mean, we're talking having an impact on millions of people all across the world, and I can't think of anyone I'd rather spend the next hour with. So, John, I'd love to turn the rest of the time over to you.
Oh, Becky, thank you, and I'm so sorry. I literally called in and couldn't get in, and I could hear you talking for the last 5 minutes.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's my fault. It's my fault, but I just feel bad because it's kind of like I'm here. but hey, I was here, but I wasn't here. But I heard you, and I thought, my gosh, you did a nice job speaking. I thought maybe I ought to just take notes and let you talk tonight.
No. We'd much rather hear from you.
I'm just really glad to be with you, and I'm glad to be with all of your folks. And obviously, you have a great organization, Kaiani, and I just am grateful every time I get to come in and talk to you. Becky, I don't think I did this, but I'm going to do a teaching in a moment. But did I tell you when Margaret and I were in Australia and New Zealand on a cruise about a month ago that I got to go to the Australian Open?
No, I didn't. I would have remembered that.
Okay. I'm going to start with a story, okay?
With the tennis, the Australian Open.
Yeah. Did I tell you about this?
Yes. I love it. But you can tell it again. I'd love to hear it again.
No. If I told it to your people, I don't want to tell it again. No. I don't want to do that. It was just a great experience of how you get in. So let me tell you another story. I don't think, because it was 3 weeks ago. I don't think I've been on a call since that. Did I tell you about being in the AT&T Pro-Am in Pebble?
No. You have to tell us about that.
Okay, it was a golf. It's a golf tournament where the professionals, you know, obviously are playing for a lot of money. But it's one of the tournaments where for 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, amateurs can play with a pro. So they hook up one amateur for each pro. And they have 153 teams. And so anyway, I had an invitation to go play, and I did play. And it was such a wonderful experience. I played with a pro that's only a third year, but he's doing good. He's doing good. He hasn't won a tournament yet, but he's doing good. His name is Richard Lee. And so they pair you up. I had nothing to do with that, but On the first tee, he came up to me and smiled and shook my hand, and his first words to me, Becky, were "failing forward," and I laughed. He said that book was an important book to me, and then he told me about his father-in-law, I guess. He said, "My father-in-law's read every book you've ever written," and so we spent 3 wonderful days together, and he was a great kid, and it was a joy to encourage him, and he played really well. And so on the last day, we were in the hunt to make the playoffs. 25 teams make the playoffs. Again, as I said, out of 153. And so I got to the last, the 18th green on the third day on Saturday. And we were 16 under, and that was the cut line. You had to be 16 under to make it. And he putted first. and he's a really good putter. In fact, he putted very well that week, but he missed his putt, then that would have been for a par, and so I knew I had to make my putt. In fact, my caddy looked at me immediately and said, you have to make this putt to make the playoffs. And so I kind of thought, oh, I better study this thing pretty good. And, you know, it wasn't a big putt, but it was a hard one. It was 12 and a half feet, probably downhill, a little, probably a foot and a half break to the left. And so I started studying, and his pro caddy came over and said, look, he said, let me help you read this. He said, you got to make this putt, for us to make the playoffs. And so he helped me out and showed me right where to put it. And I remember Becky just standing over that ball. And I've always thought I'd love to be on the 18th green with a putt that was truly going to make a difference. I thought, well, here I am. I'm 67, and I got that. If that's a bucket list, you just got it, Maxwell. And I just can't describe to you how I felt. The adrenaline, I wasn't nervous about it. I was wanting to putt it. I wasn't sure I'd make it, but I thought I could, and I felt good about it and kept my head down. And when my putter came through and putted the ball, as soon as it left my putter, I knew it was in. I just knew it was. In fact, halfway there, I told my cat, I said, it's in. And it went in, and of course, everybody was cheering, and the caddies came over and jumped up and down, and literally that putt got us into the playoff. In fact, that putt kept Peyton Manning out. He was behind me, and he didn't make it because I'd made that putt. But Becky, it was so fun to have a putt like that, and to be able to. To make it, you know, if I did it 10 more times, I'd miss it every time. So I'm not that good of a golfer, but I love to play. And when I get to play, I don't get to play a lot. But that was so much fun. And then, you know, the next day made the playoffs, and was on TV, and it was just a great experience. One thing I want to say about it is I tell people all the time that people only ask your advice if they're good, if you're good at something. And I played golf with my partner for 4 days and another pro for that weekend. And Becky, not one time did either one of those pros ask me to give them a golf tip or line up a putt for them. They weren't about to go to me because that's not what my strength zone is. And I tell people, if you really want to mentor somebody and add value to people, you got to be good at something. But it was a great experience. And so anyway. Enough about golf. Let's talk about things that we need to talk about today, and that is relationships. Because what you're in is such a people business, I thought tonight I would just talk to you about relationships and the ability to connect well with people. I often talk about the fact that relationships are the foundation. Really, that's the foundation for leadership. You build your leadership off your ability to connect with people. I wrote a book several years ago called Winning with People, and the book just really helps a lot of people. It's a relationship book. Interestingly enough, it was a book I wrote. I was so impacted by Dale Carnegie growing up. And I read his book when I was in the seventh grade, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And so I kind of wanted to do it. I kind of wanted to do a modern version of that. And so I wrote it. And his grandson, when I was living in Atlanta, came down to Atlanta, had lunch with me, and had that book with me. And he told me, he said, this is my grandfather's book. He said, this is the closest book to being written of how my grandfather thought. And we had a great conversation that day. And I would like to take a few minutes and maybe just kind of pull out some important thoughts out of that book. The thesis of Winning with People is that people can usually trace their successes and failures to relationships, and that's just a fact. If everyone on our call today, Becky, if they could talk to us and we'd say, I'd like you to go back and tell me about a time in your life where you were really successful, or I'd like to talk to us about a time when you really had a difficult time and had some failures along the way. I almost guarantee you that they would go back to their relationships. People were either adding value to them or people were maybe subtracting value from them. I used to do a lot of counseling, and I discovered that 95% of 95% of my counseling was based on people and relationships. They were in the counseling room because they were probably having a difficult time, you know, getting along with people. In my book, Today Matters, I talk about the fact that we're either preparing or repairing all the time. Every day, I'm either repairing something I did wrong yesterday, and that's probably a relationship issue. Or if I did it right yesterday, then I get a focus on today and I get a prepare. 7 out of 10 firings are relationship issues. Most people get fired from their job not because they maybe didn't have the skill set. They get fired from the job because they didn't have relationship skills and they didn't know how to get along with people. And again, in the work that I do and the work that you do, Becky, getting along with people, connecting, bringing them alongside of you is so essential to success. And so I wanted to give some principles. I call these people principles, and they're just simple. But I found that they really work. I've just found that they really work. And I want to pass them on to the group today. And the first one, is what I call the LENS, L-E-N-S, the LENS principle. And the LENS principle just says who we are determines how we view others. And I found that that's very, very true. I see people not by how they are. I see people by how I am. I see you, Becky, through me. What happens is if I have for example, if I have a low self-image of me, I probably have a low self-image of you. And we see people not as they are, but we see people as we are. And how we, who we are determines how we view others. I can remember in my early days having a friend I went to college with. And then we both went to the same state, Indiana, to start our ministries. You know, I started off as a pastor. And I remember he had me come over to speak to his congregation. So Margaret and I went over, and that evening before we spoke to them, we went over to his house for dinner. And he kept talking about his people in real, kind of derogatory terms. In fact, he had an expression. He kept calling, and you know, he said, "Well, I'm glad you're going to talk to these ding-a-lings, and you know, ding-a-ling this, ding-a-ling that, you know, and this person's a ding-a-ling, and that person's a ding-a-ling." And I'm sitting there at the table, and I'm just getting totally disgusted, and you know, food's not going down well, and I just could tell that he didn't value, appreciate his people, And I finally looked at him and said, "Mike," I said, do you know why you have so many ding-a-lings in your congregation?" And he looked at me and said, "No," but he said, "I'd sure like to know why." This is putting your friendship on the line. I looked at him and I said, "You have so many ding-a-lings in your congregation because you're the biggest ding-a-ling of all. And you're seeing them as you are." And so I went and spoke to those people, nice people. And that night on the way home, Sheriff Martin, I said, he won't stay there long. I mean, he's disgusted with his people, and sure enough, he didn't. I remember him calling me, and he said, "Boy, I'm going to a really good church in Ohio, and I'm so glad I'll be getting rid of these people and not have to put up with these ding-a-lings, et cetera." And I thought to myself, how sad, how very sad. And I told Mark there, I said, "Well, you know, he'll go to this new congregation, and guess what he's going to find there? He's going to find ding-a-lings there, too, you know, because that's who he is." And what I talk to leaders all the time is the fact that when you're leading your people, you're going to put the value on your people that you probably put on yourself. You're probably going to see your people as you see yourself. And I think that's really true in all of our lives. Once in a while, not often, in our earlier days, once in a while, Margaret would be asked to speak. Somebody would say, "You know, would you speak for us?" And And I always hate it when they ask her because it's not her gift. And I knew that if she said yes, she'd be coming to me real quickly and asking me what she should talk about, which let me just stop here and say, if somebody comes and asks you what they should talk about, I'm probably communicating isn't what their gift is. And I would frustrate her. I'd say, well, honey, you know, just, you know, go to the banquet, go to the place where you want to go speak, and just watch, observe, pick up on who's there and what's being said and what's the theme, and just get in the moment. And when you get in the moment, then when you get up, I said, start whatever you're going to speak on with connecting with the people and theme and what they've said that evening. And I said, just kind of, you know, just go and read the room and then communicate. And she hated that answer. But she hated that answer because that wasn't her gift. And to me, I wasn't trying to frustrate. It was, you know, that's what I do. That's how I do it. And it's a fact that, again, who we are determines how we view others, how we see ourselves. And now let me flip that. I'm terrible with matching clothes. The inner circle all know, my staff know, that when they see me, I have something that didn't match. And what that meant is I got up before Margaret got up, and I tried to pick out my own clothes. That's kind of a joke. And so really, I mean, when I'm going to go speak or something, my Aunt Margaret picks it out for me because she can match and does a great job. I mean, that's her gift, colors. She's great with colors, whether it's decorating a home, what she wears. And so, she'll help me. She'll go to the closet and say, John, this is so simple. You know, you take this and you match it with this. And she, you know, she kind of gives me a, kind of sets it up for me. And I get excited because, and then what I do, being typical who I am, I put those clothes together so the next time I think, oh, I'll come in here and I'll know that these things match. Of course, the next time she takes the same pair of slacks and does it with a different shirt or a different coat, and she loves to mix it up and frustrates me. And, you know, I'm sitting there saying, oh, I just learned how to do one set. We're already on to another set. Once in a while, I'll dress myself and I'll go out and I'll come back later on the day and she'll look at me and obviously I didn't match very well. You know, she'll say, my gosh, John, you know, did you wear that? I'll say, no, I had, you know, I went out naked. It's a mirage. You just see me there. But of course I wore that, you know. And then who saw you? Well, if you see, for colors, it's very easy for Margaret to see who she is. So, you know, if I'm talking to somebody at a conference, she'll say, well, you know, what did the guy with the gray sweater say to you when you were talking to him? I don't even remember the gray sweater. I didn't even know it was a gray sweater. And that's very important for us to understand, because if we're looking at our people and we're constantly coming up with negative things about our people and they're not pleasing as much, it's probably a statement about us. And that's why I always say the greatest challenge I have as a leader is leading someone else. The greatest challenge I have as a leader is leading me. The greatest challenge I have as a leader is fixing someone else. The greatest challenge I have as a leader is fixing me. The greatest challenge I have as a leader is not changing someone else. The greatest challenge I have as a leader is changing me. And when I change me, I can change them. When I fix me, I can fix them. But if I'm broken, I can't fix them. It's a powerful principle, the Lens principle. Who we are determines how we view others. It just works. I've just found that it really works. The second people principle, Becky and all my Kayana friends, the second principle is what I call the hammer principle. The hammer principle just simply says never use a hammer to swat a fly off of someone's forehead. Now, you say, well, of course not. I mean, that's kind of overkill, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is. But I've known all kind of people who that's what they'll do. It's something kind of insignificant, and they pull out the hammer. And the problem gets worse. In fact, I often say that our reaction to things usually is worse than the action itself. And so the problem increases. And so you ask yourself constantly, am I reacting? Am I taking things that in my life or in my team, and are they becoming worse after I get a hold of them? I often say that, you know, we carry two buckets around with us. One is gasoline, one is water. And as we walk through our organization, if there's a little fire that breaks out, if some kind of spark of contention or some kind of a problem, we're either taking that bucket of gasoline and throwing it on that little spark, and when we get done, it's a lot worse than what it was when we got there, or else we're putting the water and throwing on it, and it's now a little wisp of smoke, and everything's fine. But what I've discovered about leadership is many times, many, many times, we make the problem work. The problem is already there, but our reaction is worse than the action, and we overkill, and we use a hammer to swat a fly off of someone's forehead. I know this principle. In fact, I was doing an interview one time, and somebody asked me where I learned all my relationship principles, all my people principles. And I said, I learned from my mistakes. I learned very early that certain things work relationally and certain things don't work relationally. And that there are many things, many of these people principles I learned not because I was good, many of these people principles I learned because I did it wrong in the beginning. And this hammer principle was one of them. And in our early years of marriage, Margaret and I, she was a teacher, of course, I was pastoring a little church. And in those early years, we would have conflict, as anybody does in early marriage. And I'll tell you what, I was just exceptional. I was a good debater. and I won all the arguments. I won them all. It was just amazing. And I not only won all the arguments, but then I to show you how stupid I was, I then declared victory. And then got my hands in the air and going around the room, you know, we are the champions and all that foolishness. And I'll never forget one day Margaret and I had a talk, and she told me, she talked to me about how I used a hammer to swat the fly off of a forehead and take and problems continue because of that. And she said to me, she said, John, she said, you're winning the arguments, but you're losing my love. And I didn't sleep that night. I thought, man, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to build the love. And that's when I realized that again, I was overreacting. I was winning at all costs. And I would say something that's very important to all of us, to me, to you, to all of us. And that is never let the situation mean more than the relationship. And I don't know what the situation is in your life, in your marriage, or in your office, or on your team, or whatever. But I've seen a lot of times that whatever the situation was, it became bigger than the relationship, and the relationship began to suffer. And any of you that have teenagers, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because teenagers continually challenge you. And there are just such days where you just really ask the question, should I let them live? You know, do I let them continue on? And I can still remember when our kids were teenagers, Margaret and I, we might be dealing with an issue with the kids. And so we would, you know, we'd sit on the couch and we'd hold hands. And, you know, the kids probably thought we were being romantic, but really we were holding hands because Margaret was sending me signals, and I'd have a tendency the longer the kids talked, and especially if it wasn't going my way, to get to the edge of the couch so that I'd be in a pouncing position so I could attack them at any moment. And she'd be squeezing my hand, saying, you know, down boy, relax, relax. You know, don't let the situation mean more than the relationship. Don't use a hammer to swat a fly off of someone's forehead. And I just say on this principle, I see so many times people truly take molehills and make mountains out of them, and they lose their way. They lose their way because they don't see the perspective that they need to. And the hammer principle is just an awesome, awesome principle of don't overreact. Just say to yourself, "This too shall pass," because it really will. And whenever I have a time to really teach people, relationship skills, one of the things I teach them is the fact that take high road, turn the other cheek. You don't have to win every argument. You don't have to win every battle. Let other people have their day. Let other people win. Don't just always have to come out on top. Because the good news is you might win, but you're losing while you're winning. The third principle, I want to kind of teach three principles. I want to teach three practices, three kind of relationship practices that we can engage in. The third principle is the elevator principle. And the elevator principle just simply says we either lift people up or take them down. And that's just a fact. Look at your life as an elevator. And when people come into contact with you and they get on your elevator, do you take them higher or do you bring them down? Maybe to simplify this, every one of us in our relationships, we're either a plus or a minus. We're either adding value or we're subtracting value from people. In fact, I often say that we're not only a plus or a minus, but we could be a multiplication sign or a divider, too. If we're good with relationships, we not only can add value to people, after a while we can multiply value to people. If we're really bad with relationships, we not only can be a minus in their life, we can be divisive in their life. And we all know people that no matter where we are, when we come into contact with them, they encourage us, they lift us up. And our face just brightens when we realize we're going to be with them, we're going to be talking to them, we're going to be able to spend some time on them, because we know they give us hope. They just take us to a higher level than what we go ourselves. They're an elevator that truly lifts us up. And we also know people who, when we get on their elevator, we know we're going to the basement. All right, that's where we're going. You know, they're basement people, and they take us down to the basement. You know, they only have probably two buttons on their elevator, and that's either B1 or B2, and it just means you're going to the lowest basement or the higher basement, but you're going to the basement. You're going to go down. I think what's sad about people who subtract from people's lives is, I think what makes that sad is they really, I think most aren't aware of it. I mean, if you just walked up to them and said, you know, my name's John, I'm your friend, and I just want to say to you, people don't like you. They really don't like you. I think some of these people would be shocked. But they really are minuses. They really are elevators that take people down. And I think the opposite is true, too. I think just as those who take people down are unintentional, usually, not always, but usually, I think people that lift people up are very intentional. Because I think the natural desire for all of us, I think with who we naturally are, is most of us are naturally selfish. And what I mean by being naturally selfish is the fact that I think we want somebody to take care of us and come our way and quote make our day. So for us to be a positive influence in people's life, and remember this, leadership is influence, without any question, what you and I have to do to be successful is we have to influence people in a very positive way until they want to follow us, they want to be around us, they want to be led by us. That when they see us, they smile because they know we are lifters, and you know we're not going to pull them down. We're going to lift them up. So therefore, what we have to do is we have to understand that we're either lifting people, taking them up to a higher level, or we're kind of leaning on people and we're becoming an extra weight to them. I think it was Ellen Mae Wilcox who said so well, there's two kinds of people on earth today, just two kinds of people. No more, I say, not the good and bad, but it's well understood, the good or half bad, bad or half good. No, there's two kinds of people on earth, I mean. It's the people who lift, and it's the people who lean. And the question is very simple. Are we lifting, or are we leaning? Are we taking people up, or are we taking people down? Now, there are a lot of principles in my Winning with People book, a lot of people principles. I've given you three of them today. The elevator principle, we either lift people up or we take them down. The hammer principle, never use a hammer to swat a fly off of someone's forehead. And the lens principle, who we are determines how we view others. But those are good people principles. And they'll help us. When we learn them and practice them, they'll make a difference. But one of the things that I think really is helpful to people, it's a little book I wrote several years ago, right after Winning with People. I wrote a book called 25 Ways to Win with People. And I just thought, I'm going to put flesh on the things that I've taught. I'm going to help people practice relationship skills, and I'm going to give you a few of them because these practices, in fact, I have always felt when people ask me what's the best relationship training I can do for my people, I've always said the 25 ways to win people is awesome, and I'm going to tell you why. It's all tangible behavior. And it can very quickly be seen. It can very quickly be used as an example. And I tell people all the time, take the 25 ways with people and spend a half a year and every week teach your people another people practice. And then say, this week, let's go practice this wonderful relationship principle. And next week, come back and tell us the story. What did you learn? And I have found that teams and companies that use that just come away. And it's just... it's so simple. It's totally tangible. There's nothing subjective about it. And it's so applicable to people and how they learn. So let me give you just for a moment, let me give you a few of these practices, because you can start, what's great about what I'm going to give you now is you can start this tonight. You can start it tomorrow. And I promise you, they work. Number one, do for others what they cannot do for themselves. It's a great practice. In other words, what that means is let's say I'm wanting to add value to Becky, and I want to practice a relationship principle that's really going to help her. Well, one of the things I might do is I might ask myself the question, what can I do for Becky that she can't do for herself? And if I can discover what that is, and then I can go practice that, it's just going to go a long way in me adding value to her and me endearing myself to her and connecting with her. Ann Byler, from Auntie Ann's Pretzels that you see so many times in airports. I went up to Pennsylvania and had dinner one night with her and her husband, Josiah, and I was going to speak at their national conference the next day. And in our conversation, talking, Ann looked at me and she said, on my bucket list is to sometime meet the Cathy family, people who started and own Chick-fil-A. She said, I just admire their culture. I admire how well they do things. And she said, I just really someday hope that I can meet them. And I'll never forget, I said, looked at her and Josiah, I said, well, I can take care of that. I said, they're good friends of ours. I said, if you'll fly down to Atlanta, let's do dinner. I'll bring Truett Cathy, the founder, and Dan Cathy, and their wives. You guys come down and we can sit around the table and have good food and have great conversation. And she did. She did. Within 6 months, they flew down to Atlanta and we had a dinner with them and Truett was there and his wife and Dan and it was phenomenal. It was a magic evening. It was a 3.5-hour dinner with good food, even better conversation. And I can still remember how grateful she was. What did I do for her? I did something for her she could do for herself. My son-in-law, Steve, when Ella was born, Margaret and I happened to be in the room with our daughter, Elizabeth, and with Steve when Ella was born. And so when it came time to cut the cord, Steve looked at me and he said, John, I want you to do this. And I said, oh, no, you're the dad. No. He said, no, I'm very serious. He said, I planned this. I want you to cut the cord. So I was so blown away by that wonderful gesture. I went over and cut the cord. And it was just a highlight for me. And later on that day, when baby's born, baby's good, mama's good, everybody's kind of settling down a little bit, Steve came to me and said, now, John, he said, you teach, do for others what they cannot do for themselves. And he said, you are so blessed, it's hard to do something for you that you can't do for yourself. And so I kept asking myself, what can I do for him? It couldn't happen unless I present him with the opportunity. He said, I all of a sudden I thought about cutting the cord for Ella. And he said, I knew immediately I wanted to do that for you. To this day, I just have one of the most warm memories as a grandfather and as a father when he just said, hey, I want you to do this. He did for me what I couldn't do for for myself. Let me tell you how that will turn around and do a 360 for you a lot of times. I have an organization called Equip, which basically trains leaders. It's a leadership training organization. It's the largest in the world. We've trained 6 million leaders in 190 countries. So I'm in Africa, and I'm with Tom Mullen, who has been a longtime friend of mine and pastors a great church here in West Palm Beach. And so Tom was telling me at that time that they were at maybe 8,000, and he was talking to me. You know, he said, we're kind of at a plateau, and, you know, I'd sure like to get up to 10,000 and keep growing. And I remember looking at him and saying to him, well, Tom, I can help you. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, do you want me to come down? I'll teach for you. I said, I can't teach a lot because of my schedule, but if you'd let me teach for you once in a while and then advertise in the business community, I said, my gosh, I said, we would reach people that, you know, that know me from the business side. And he said, are you kidding? I said, no, I'm not kidding at all. And so literally, Margaret, I moved down here. And I moved down here to add value to him. Of course, it was a tremendous blessing to me. And the first Sunday that I taught, we advertised the business community. I think they had well over 500 business people the first time ever there. And I've been doing this now for 6 or 7 years, and it's just my delight. I spoke recently for him on Super Bowl Sunday. We had 23,000 in attendance, and we had 40,000 online. And it's just been a real joy. I did something for Tom he couldn't do for himself. Now, here's how this comes right back to us. About a year ago, I changed presidents in Equip, and I wanted Tom to come alongside of me because he's such a good leader and just he's like a pipe piper. People just flock to him. And I knew that he would attract the right kind of people in my organization. So I asked him to, you know, be the president of Equip, and he said yes. Now, you know, he's just doing a great job. And I think the lesson here is that I came down to add value to him. I've done my best to do that. Now it's turned around. He's adding value to me. So I think when you do for others what they cannot do for themselves, a lot of times they'll turn around and do for you what you can't do for yourself. And it's just a great practice. And ask yourself every day. Ask yourself every day, what is it that I can do for someone that truly they couldn't do for themselves, and I'm going to make it happen for them. It's a great practice. Another great practice I love, and this one is so simple, but it just works. And that is practice the 30-second rule. And the 30-second rule is very simple. It just means that in the first 30 seconds of a conversation with you, I'm going to say something that is uplifting, something that's encouraging, something that is kind, something that would empower or edify you in the first 30 seconds of the conversation. I'm going to set the tone of the conversation by saying something to you that is going to lift you up. Now, I've had that rule for my staff for years. You know, I just taught them that when you see somebody that you haven't seen maybe for a little time, just pour into their life. Just say something positive about it. And I learned this from my father, who's an incredible man. He's 92. He's still in just great health. In fact, we just had the dedication in Atlanta a couple weeks ago at the John Maxwell Leadership Center. I'm just blown away by this incredible leadership center that's right off of 85, located by in just one of the prime areas of Atlanta. And I'm just shocked and grateful. And, you know, my dad was there, and he's an amazing man. And he taught me the 30-second rule. When I was in college, he was the president of the college I attended, the first one. And I'd walk across campus with him, and it took, my goodness, it would take an hour. Because every student who would come by, he'd stop and inquire how they were. He knew them all by name. How are your parents? How are the classes? What can I do for you? And sometimes I was wanting to, maybe we were going to go somewhere, and I just wanted to get to the car so we could take off. And I would be impatient, and I would watch my father just walk slowly through the crowd, touching people, adding value to people, lifting people. He understood that 30-second rule. What's interesting is he was president of that college for 17 years, so he got an impact on an awful lot of kids. I've watched it now today. These kids, he lives in Central Florida. And these kids that went to school under him, they look him up. They come and sit down and talk to him and pour into his life and thank him for what he did for them. And I watched my father, even at this age, still today, do the very same thing. I mean, if you came into the room and my dad was in the room, he'd go right up to you, introduce himself, and immediately begin to encourage you and pour into your life. I one time asked Dad, I said, Dad, how do you know a person needs encouragement? He said, well, he said, John, if they're breathing. That's the qualifier, if they're breathing, encouragement. I suppose if they're not breathing, if they're dead, you can probably don't need to encourage the dead. But that's my father. And he understood the value of that 30-second rule and coming to a person and pouring your life into them right on the front end, and it just makes all the difference in the world. A third thing that just is amazing to me is just to help people win, help them be successful. And I would even go make it further and combine two people principles there, not only help people win, but be the first to help. There's something about stepping up first and being the first to help that's just huge. Because significance, you know, success may be about us and what we've done, but significance is all about others. And significance is so much more important than success. And one of the ways that we gain significance is to literally help people win, just literally pour into their life. Zig Ziglar just affected my life tremendously in my middle 20s when I heard him say, if you'll help people get what they want, they'll help you get anything you want. And I, for the first time, realized I was doing it backwards. I was trying to get everybody on my team, help me with my, they joined my team. And I saw that day. I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm doing this exactly wrong. I'm trying to get people interested in me instead of me being interested in them. I'm trying to have people help me instead of me helping them. I'm telling people, lift me when I should be lifting them. And I just turned it around. I said, I'm just going to help people, lift people, be interested in people first. I'm going to be the first to do this. I'm going to help them. I'm going to do everything in my power to encourage and add value to them. And I've just found that that's just been a huge part of my relationship success. I don't know how to say this any more than just a way to say it. I know people have financial goals. I don't think there's anything wrong with financial goals. I personally don't have any, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The only financial goal I've ever had in my life was how much money I could give away. And I've set that goal pretty high. In the last couple of years, I've been able to achieve that. But I tell people all the time, I don't know if you have set financial goals. Just instead of setting goals of how much money you want to make, why don't you set a goal of how many people you want to help? And how am I going to add value to people? And again, I believe what Zig said is true. If you and I are really intentional in adding value to people, I believe those same people will come around and they'll just continue to add value to you. I've seen it work in so many lives. I've seen it work in my life, and that's for sure. And when you put people first, I was telling you earlier about the AT&T Pro-Am that I played in. On the day of on Sunday, the TV day, and our team qualified. I got on the ninth hole and I pulled the shot and it hit the golf cart and just kept rolling. I mean, it rolled like 100 yards beyond what it should roll. And I'm in front of everybody about 100 yards, so the kind of crowd gathers around. My ball was on a grate. Of course, you can pick up the ball on the golf cart and have a free drop. So I picked it up and I dropped it. And here's all these people there. And I said, wow. I said, you know, I'm the amateur, obviously. I hit the golf cart instead of the fairway. But I said, I aim on at the golf cart. I just found that if I hit cement, my ball goes farther. And I just started laughing with them. And, you know, it was a tough shot. I had to hit it over a tenth of the green. I put the club out. I said, anybody else want to make this shot? And I just poured my life into it for a couple of minutes. and develop friends and people that, that I could connect with. And just every day, ask yourself one simple question as you begin your day, and that is, how do I add value to people? Who are the people I'll add value to? Once you figure out who the people are you're going to add value to, and once you figure out how you're going to add value to them, I promise you, your day is going to be filled with significance. And it'll be more than success. Success is about you. Significance is about others. And then another practice is the that's just really, really helpful as far as helping others is the exchange principle. And the exchange principle just says that instead of putting others in their place, put yourself in their place. One more AT&T story. On the Saturday when we were all trying to qualify for the last round, the other pro, not the pro I was partnering with, but the other pro in our foursome, hit a shot, and he couldn't see the green, and he missed the green, and it went kind of left over there more by the driving range, and so they have hundreds of volunteers who just try to help them in the tournament. The tournament, I think, raised $10 million for charity this year, and so one of the helpers in the tournament saw the ball clear over by the driving range, and he just picked it up. He thought it was a driving range ball because they come over there sometimes. And when the caddy came up over the hill and he saw that the ball had been picked up, he just started berating this elderly gentleman volunteer. And just wasn't nice. And it just hurt me. And the gentleman just listened to him and said he was sorry. And the guy just didn't let up on him. I mean, he was not very, very kind. And I'm over on the green, and I have to putt. I'm thinking I can hardly wait to putt out because I want to make a beeline over to this gentleman, this volunteer. And so when I putted out, I went over and put my arm around him, and I said, I've had days like this. I've had days when I picked up somebody's golf ball that I shouldn't. And I just loved on him for a few minutes and told him to be encouraged. And it's okay. If that's the worst thing he does today, then he'll have a good day. When I was done talking to him for, I didn't have a long time, probably a minute while everybody else was putting out, shook my hand, he thanked me, had tears in his eyes. And I just thought to myself, instead of putting other people in their place, just put yourself in their place. See it from their point of view. And I often say that what do? Leaders listen, and then they learn, and then they lead. And they get all their leadership cues from listening to other people and learning from what they're hearing. And I close with one other one real quickly because there's not a lot of time, and but it's a great one, and that's the practice of partnership, which says basically working together increases the odds of winning together. And when we work together, we really begin to compound and make a difference in people's lives. I've often said if you want to add, you get better yourself. If you want to multiply, help other people get better. And I just say this to you in closing that one of the things, Becky, I want to thank you again because you've allowed me. We're in a couple of weeks going to be in L.A., you know, for our great conference. I'm looking forward to being with you and looking forward to seeing you. But we've spent some time together now in partnership, and I try to add value to you, and I'm sure we got a lot of value out of you and your team. But I just have learned, that, and at my age now, life is way too short for me to be a Lone Ranger or to go alone. I have no interest in it at all. I want to go with someone else. My expression is I want to make a difference with people who want to make a difference doing something that makes a difference. At a time when it makes a difference, and I want to do that. I want to do that. And Becky, I want to thank you because you've allowed me to do that, and you've allowed me to come into the life, not only your life, but the life of your people and your team. And I know that all of you on this call today recognize the leadership that she's given to you. And And the opportunity that you've given me to come and speak into your life and their life has been a real privilege, and I've done my best. And, of course, in a couple of weeks, we'll all be together in Los Angeles. Don't miss that. You come. Come with yourself. Don't come with yourself. Come with others. Bring people with you. Because it's going to be a great time. But I just have found that win-win in a partnership is everything. And if I can do something for you that you cannot do, and you can do something for me that I cannot do, well, together we can do things that we couldn't do by our own, and we can do great things. It was a Mother Teresa quote, by the way. And you've allowed me this year to kind of come alongside of you and hope to have added value to Becky, you and your team. And thank you very much for letting me speak in your life, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, John. You've definitely added value to all of our lives, and from a personal standpoint, I could never thank you enough, and we're so looking forward to literally just a couple weeks here in LA and being able to have a chance to spend some time with you face to face. And I like I said, I can't imagine anything better. So thank you again for all of your time.
It's my joy, and to all of you that every month have listened to me, please, when I'm out there, if you get a chance, I don't know if I'll be signing books or what, but if we get a chance, come up and say hi to me, or at least wait for me, okay? I would like to obviously be able to see you because we spent some time together. Now I want to kind of see the people I've spent some time together with. So it's going to be a great conference. Don't miss it. Be there. Be there. And let's have
thank
a great
you.
Time and we're together.
Thank you. Again, we couldn't thank you enough for the value that you brought to our lives. So, again, everybody, we can't wait to see you guys in L.A. March 15th. If you have not yet registered, I think we have 52 seats left, and we still have 2 weeks, which means there's no more procrastinating. It's no longer an option. It's kind of a time to put everything that we've learned to the test and that put that action into play. So, again, March 15th in LA with John Maxwell, and it's going to be a monumental, life-changing weekend, and we can't wait to see everybody there. So, again, thank you to John. Thank you for everybody taking time from your lives, from your families to participate in this and make that investment in yourself. And again, you guys, safe travels wherever you are, and God bless. Have a beautiful week. Bye-bye.
Blessings on you. Thank you very, very much.